The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Nick Langworthy, the chairman of the New York State Republican Party. Welcome back, Chairman Langworthy. It's always great to have you here.
Oh, thanks for having me, Alan.
You told us the last time that you were working very hard to build the party enrollment up. How's that going? What have you been doing? Can Republicans ultimately survive such a blue state?
Well, I have been very aggressively traveling the state to try to show a culture change within the Republican Party, that we're going to take the fight aggressively, especially to your friend, the governor. And
Cheap shot.
Especially, the policies that happened to the state of New York in the last legislative session.
So which ones do you find you're getting the most reaction to? That Cuomo has espoused, that the legislature has, all Democratic legislature has passed. What seems to be raising people's ire?
Well, I tell you what, it was incredible the reaction that people came out with when Cuomo came forward with his new license plate tax that he had to then shelve after, we mobilized, we got people involved, we did press conferences throughout the state, and elected officials and party leaders and concerned taxpayers got together and said, enough is enough with this. I mean, the governor was talking out of both sides of his mouth, and it came home to roost.
Is there anything else that he's got before the public that you think that can really hurt his popularity or his prestige?
I think he's lost tremendous ground with people based on, his advocacy for driver's licenses for illegal immigrants. I think that is something that, has come to symbolize, the new tone in the Cuomo administration, where in Cuomo's New York, criminals come first, taxpayers come last. Everything in the last legislative session was about how to bring more criminal rights forward, how to, a criminal's Bill of Rights. That followed the pardoning for people so that the felons could vote. We have the elimination of cash bail, and you talk to anybody in law enforcement, they're going to tell you that the quality of life in this state is going to go down next year with all of the new rights for criminals or people that have been accused of crimes. And it's going to affect public safety, and it's going to affect quality of life throughout the state. So I think there's a lot of things that are changing with the culture in New York State that are going to really deteriorate Andrew Cuomo's standings in the state of New York.
It's always tough to run for a fourth term. He says he's running for a fourth term. Does that work to your advantage?
I relish the opportunity to put the Cuomo administration before the voters one more time. His father couldn't get a fourth term, and he can't either.
His father ran, of course, in a very Republican year. This doesn't promise to be a Republican year, does it?
2022 is a long time from now, Alan.
Yeah, well, that's true. You make a point. So the Medicaid pay-to-play scandal, that's an interesting one to me. And when and if he comes on with me again, I'm going to ask him about it. And that is, the hospital's people gave the Democratic Party a huge, I think, $1 million, right, Nick? And as a result, all of a sudden, there's more money in the budget for what they want. Is that pay to play?
I think this is deeply troubling. It sure looks like pay to play to me. This has been kind of the MO of this administration. You have people that went to jail for lining their own pockets. And when you see something like $1 million contribution immediately followed by a major policy decision like changing in Medicaid reimbursement rates, that is terrifying, because it shows how compromised this administration might be. And we've called on the U.S. attorney to immediately investigate this. I think if Tish James was doing an honest job as attorney general, she might be on this too.
You say you called on the U.S. attorneys. That's the Republican U.S. attorneys, right?
It happens to be a Republican administration now, but I believe the U.S. attorney
you know, Mr. Berman's certainly been equal opportunity in terms of partisanship.
It would appear so. So Andrew Cuomo's been exposed in this other thing that you're talking about, this pay-to-play. Are there other examples of that?
Well, I think the things that we've seen, you know, with the Buffalo Billion scandal, with Mr. Calleros, I mean, there's a deeply troubling, you know, pattern of pay-to-play that's gone on in this administration. The governor's insulated himself very well. I mean, his handlers, not so much. You know, that's why they're going to do time. But
How's he done that? How's that possible? Let's switch subjects. Let's go to the I word, impeachment. I keep my eye on polling, and it now is over 50% of people who want him impeached or in many cases removed from office. That's Trump. That's got to be tough for you in an election year coming up in 2020, right?
Every year is an election year. I believe the president has, you know, significant support. I think that this is just a continuation of the Democratic playbook. They have intended to impeach this president since the minute he was walking down the inaugural parade, and nothing's changed. So you have this hyper political impeachment, you know, process coming. They haven't taken a single vote to actually, you know, have an impeachment. But you've watched Nancy Pelosi knuckle under to the squad in the extremes within the House of Representatives that are pushing this narrative at all costs.
So when you mention the squad, just for the few people who don't know what you're talking about, what are you talking about when you say the squad?
Well, you're talking about AOC and Rashida Tlaib and I'm missing somebody there. But, you know, that gang of freshmen, extreme you know, members of Congress that come from the socialist wing of the Democrat Party, they are running the show. They are absolutely running the show. And Nancy Pelosi is terrified of them. And other incumbent members, including many in New York, are very fearful of primaries that they're going to face in the next year.
And are you at all troubled by the fact that we have a president who sat with a leader of another country, the Ukraine, and said, by the way, do me a favor, can you get dirt on my potential opponent? Isn't that bothersome to you?
That's not the way I read the transcript here. I mean, you know, the president didn't withhold anything, and it literally just mentions that the Biden should be investigated, and now we have an impeachment. Now, you know, Joe Biden has a son that is making $50,000 a month with no expertise and no explanation, yet in billions of dollars float on his watch. I mean, give me a break. I mean, this is a hyper-political impeachment. This is a hit job, and this is just an intention. I mean, the one member of Congress stood forward and said, we have to impeach him because he might just get reelected. And that terrifies them more than anything.
You know, on some things I agree with you, Nick, in your criticisms, but on this one I don't. I think it was quite clear that this president was asking for help in getting dirt on Biden.
You're entitled to your opinion, Doctor.
That's a good thing to say. So where does this go? Where does the impeachment in your Republican mind, which you are, of course, the chairman of the Republican Party, the head Republican in the state, do you think that we'll ever see an actual impeachment by the Congress?
I wouldn't doubt that they force a vote on this issue, and you'll have a narrow band of their supporters, and they're going to walk them all off a cliff. And that's what I'm doing right now is I'm traveling to these districts of these members of Congress in New York, these freshmen that have right along said that impeachment's not good for the country, but then they've flipped around and they've knuckled under to the extremes in their own in the Congress right now. But if there's an impeachment vote in the House, I mean, there certainly won't be a removal. So what is the purpose?
That's very interesting that you've gone to the districts of the first termers. We all know the first term Congress people are the people most at risk. And you see the possibility of retaking some of those seats.
Absolutely. These are all, you know, if you look at the districts that, you know, we're really putting up on the board. I mean, I started out in Staten Island in Max Rose's district a few days ago. And, you know, he's one that said that impeachment was bad for America. Yet 12 hours after someone threatens a primary and his funding gets threatened by, you know, the socialists in Congress, he turns tail and says he's a full-throated supporter of impeachment. You know, so disingenuous. That's a district Donald Trump carried by 11 percentage points. And then, you know, we'll also be visiting Mr. Brindisi soon.
So don't you think that the problem here is that while you say that Trump may have carried a particular district, that Trump's popularity in this country is going down, not up.
I don't believe that to be the case. I don't believe the needle is moving at all.
You don't trust the polls? You don't trust the polls?
I really don't trust the polls, because, and you shouldn't either, because there was plenty of people, and I'm presuming you as well, were getting ready to celebrate Hillary Clinton's presidency.
Au contraire, my friend, I call this election. I called this election.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But there were plenty of people that were, you know, getting ready to pop champagne corks that they thought Hillary Clinton was going to be the president, and nearly every poll failed.
Of all of the potential Democratic opponents, who do you fear the most?
I mean, I don't fear anyone on the stage. I think Joe Biden's all but done, to be quite honest. It looks like Bernie's campaign is having a hard time. Elizabeth Warren appears to be rising, and I've relished that opportunity to have what will be on the ballot in 2020, which is free market capitalism versus socialism. Elizabeth Warren is probably one of the most dangerous candidates ever to run for the presidency, because she believes every bit of that rhetoric that she's spewing out there.
I love when you say free market capitalism. What does that mean to you?
It means a free market economy, and not confiscatory policies, Robin Hood style schemes that have educated a whole new generation of our youth as these candidates campaign around the country, that there's such a thing as a free lunch, that they can make terrible decisions when it comes to education or other fiscal decisions, and that the government can come and just wipe those all away.
Here's an honesty question for you. Honesty question being defined of, if you lie, then a lightning bolt comes out of the heavens and hits you right in the scalp. So here's an honesty question. Have you ever seen this president say something which is reprehensible enough to you to say, I wish he hadn't said that?
I've never agreed with any politician 100% of the time. And that's any Republican that's held office. So in that regard, you're not going to get me on some gotcha here. But
I'm going to try. I'll tell you that now.
Of course you're going to try.
Yeah.
And I would expect no less from you.
Okay.
But keep trying on Andrew when he comes on the show.
I keep trying. I ask Andrew the toughest questions I can. So let me ask you this, and this is very important. What specifically have you seen the president do that you wish he hadn't done?
Alan, I'm not going to get into all of that.
Why not?
I'm not going in that direction.
You're a brilliant man.
Flattery's going to get you nowhere on that one. So, I support the president. I mean, make no mistake, the Republican Party strongly supports the president. I mean, there has never been a president that's faced the hostility that Donald Trump has from the second he was elected. And that's not just from the Democrats and the liberals in Congress. It's from the news media. And it's been reprehensible. I mean, he is not wrong when he says presidential harassment.
Now, we see a lot of Nick Langworthy, we see a lot of senior Republicans in the Congress turning on him because of his abandonment of the Kurds in Syria. What do you say to those people?
I am far from a foreign policy expert, but the president ran, on a platform that we're going to get out of endless wars. I mean, we have wars at this point in this country that just continue on and on and on with no clear definition of success or end. And I think that, certainly there's people that have taken umbrage with his position, with moving troops out of Syria, but they shouldn't be surprised that the president wants to move troops out of places in the Middle East.
So, Chairman Langworthy, what do you think about the idea floated for years now that upstate New York should separate from downstate New York City?
I mean, there are great and vast cultural differences between our different regions of the state, but it's an unrealistic proposal in terms of ever becoming reality. I don't believe that Carl Hastie or Andrew Stewart Cousins or Andrew Cuomo are ever going to entertain a separation of New York. I am a proud upstater, proud Western New Yorker, and always will be. But we are all in this together as New Yorkers. And I will tell you that I've traveled every region of this state this year, and it has been highly educational for me. because you see people with the same themes everywhere you go. You know, whether, you know, you're in on Long Island or in Westchester or New York City or in the North Country or the Southern Tier or any point in between. Taxes are too high. The state is unaffordable and we lack the economic freedom. The greatest threat to the future of New York State is the outmigration that we face. Since Andrew became a governor, we have lost 1.2 million New Yorkers. And even last year, New York City lost population. Think about that. The capital of the world lost population. What does that say for the future? And then when you see somebody like Carl Icahn, you know, a titan in the financial industry, he's decided to move his operation to Florida in Miami. That is going to get copycatted like you wouldn't believe. And we're going to lose huge pieces of revenue as more and more people in the financial sector go to lower tax states that have higher economic freedom.
It's interesting you say that.
Our leaders need to get with the program or we are going to be hollowed out and we will not be able to afford the radical, you know, overly generous programs that that this state offers.
So let me ask you this. Congressman Collins, Chris Collins, was convicted. He's a Republican. He's an important Republican. He's a neighbor of yours, right? And then the question becomes, why did he announce that he's going to Florida?
I'm sure it's a tax benefit. I mean, he and I don't really talk much anymore. Haven't for over a year. But
Are you angry at him? Are you angry at him for getting himself into this mess?
Oh, I'm pretty well on the record on that. I mean, you know, in just my past duties as Erie County Chairman, me and my colleagues worked for a full month to find a scenario to get him off the ballot. We did, and then he left us at the altar at the 11th hour. So, yes, I was very angry then, and I remain very angry all this year, and we really didn't have much of a relationship at all after that moment. So, you know, he was narrowly reelected. That's a district that should have, you know, reelected a Republican congressman by 10,000 votes, and he won by like 1,000.
So are you pleased? So Nick Langworthy, are you pleased that he's out and that you'll have a better or a different candidate?
I expected that he would serve out and we would get a fresh slate come petition time next winter. So this is an unfortunate circumstance. Now we have to have a special election. And that is a complicated situation, always is a complicated situation. The timelines with the new New York State election law match up in a very strange way. And it's just created more drama where it was unnecessary to do so. But, you know, he used the seat to put himself in a better position, you know, with the sentencing. I'm presuming. I have not spoken with him yet.
Talk to me a little bit, if you will, Nick Langworthy, about control over the MTA. I've spoken, as you probably know, to the governor a great deal about this. He wants more control for himself. He says, you know, basically, if I'm going to be held responsible, I could do this, but I want to have more control over the MTA. I hope I'm not misstating this, but what do you think of that?
He has an awful lot of control as it is. I mean, everyone I've talked to in the past in Governor Pataki's administration said the governor, you know, basically runs the MTA. And this governor's let it go to hell. You know, you talk to anybody that's a regular commuter, and they can tell you horror stories all day long. And, you know, the subways are dirty. I've been, you know, on them a lot lately. I don't think Andrew spends much time on the subway. But it's a disaster. And he's robbed money from the system to pay for other things in other parts of the state. And, you know, I think it's dereliction of duty.
Who's Ann Schachet? New Yorker Ann Schachet elected president of the National Federation of Republican Women. What do you make of that?
Ann's a longtime party activist from Nassau County. I've known Ann for some years now. She was the state leader of that organization and then went on into their national structure and now has been elected national chair. I think it's a great testament to her hard work and the recognition of the strength of the Women's Federation here in New York State. We're excited to have someone from New York in the national leadership.
Now, you made a statement, Nick Langworthy, Chairman Nick Langworthy, calling on Senator Bianchi to apologize for an offensive comment. Can you tell us what that was about?
Well, Senator Bianchi decided to chide Lara Trump, because Lara Trump shared a map that showed the county-by-county election results color-coded of 2016, where you saw coastal areas in dark blue and a whole lot of red in between. And Senator Biagi, and I don't have the quote in front of me right now, talked about, you know, we're coming to get you. You know, there's no one up there, you know, except cornfields. And that's the sadness here is that's the mentality of those that lead the New York State Senate now, is that upstate New York, which on that map was very red, they look at it's just a bunch of cornfields. There's a bunch of taxpayers up here that are held hostage to the liberal policies that are slammed down on them by Cuomo's Democratic Party and Alessandria Biagi. And, you know, of course they didn't apologize because they don't have it in them. But they've generalized people that don't live in urban centers that they view as the unsophisticated in their world. And instead, these are just hardworking regular folks trying to make a go of it in upstate New York. So I think that that generalization of people is disgusting. And it shows the struggle we have and why there is such a divide between, you know, the mentality of upstate versus downstate. There's people that come forward saying that we should have a separation.
Do you believe, I mean, by the way,
it's not healthy.
You remember when Ed Koch did the same thing and he got slammed for it? He talked about people in gingham dresses and no Chinese restaurants upstate. People got very angry at him for that.
Alan, I got to admit to you that
I'm not old enough.
1981, so I'm not old enough to remember Ed Koch in his heyday.
That's great. That's great. So let me ask you this. You think you have a shot at taking, because this is it now, it seems to me, as a political scientist, you know, you have a shot at taking back the New York State Senate this time, because once they get to re-gerrymander the whole thing, you're out. So do you think you have a shot in this coming election?
I mean, listen, we lost it and won. I mean, you certainly could gain it back. I mean, it's a tall lift. It's something that's going to, you know, you require you to run the table, basically, in all the seats. But it's certainly not impossible. And there are provisions within the redistricting that, you know, give deference to strong minorities. So if the state Senate, you know, stays over one third of the power in the body, I mean, they will have powers within redistricting, unlike in other years.
So it's extraordinary. You got, you know, a full deck here. You got the governor is a Democrat. You've got the assembly, which is perpetually Democratic. You've got the Senate, which is, a different story. And that's got to be somewhat depressing to you personally.
Oh, I knew what I was getting into when I ran for chairman. I decided to go take this mission on. I did it out of frustration. And when I saw, that we weren't reacting well enough to our defeat, I wanted to go do something about it. And, you know, I've been traveling nonstop around the state, talking to people, organizing, you know, trying to bring new life into our party, and taking the fight directly to the hypocrisy of Cuomo's Democrat Party. And we're going to keep going. We're going to go at it aggressively. We're uniting Republicans. I mean, I believe you're going to see far more cooperation between the Senate, the Assembly, Republican conferences. We're going to have a more cohesive nature going forward as it goes to campaigns. And there's a lot of themes for us to run on. So stay tuned.
There's an old saying that there's, you know, that the Republicans in the state legislature at this point with no power have the power of warm spit. Do you disagree with that?
Well, there's a lot of people that want to talk about our demise and they want to relish in that effect. But I think that there's going to be people a lot more prepared to fight back in this next legislative session than they were in the first one after we had lost the Senate.
I only have a couple of minutes, but let me ask you this honesty question. Should Trump turn over his taxes like every other president has done?
I think that, you know, this is now in the courts. I mean, this president has been harassed from the beginning to the end. There's
yeah, but why shouldn't he turn over his taxes?
There has been no legal obligation for anyone. Are you going to turn over your taxes, Alan? I mean, he's a private businessman that has an awful lot of, you know, business holdings. I mean, he certainly hasn't, you know, gained resources due to this job. I mean, you know, you look at Forbes list. The guy's lost probably $1 billion of his net worth since he became
president. Well, we'll never know that till we see the taxes.
He did not need this job.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did not need this job. I mean, he had a perfectly good life. I mean, he is doing this out of service to the country. And he stood up and was elected based on that. This obsession with his tax returns, he was still elected after not turning them in. So what difference does it make now?
But he got 3 million less votes than Nick Langworthy. Then his opponent.
Last I checked, since the founding of the Republic here, we elect people based on the Electoral College.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But he still got fewer votes than Hillary Clinton did.
Yeah. How's her presidency going?
Her presidency is not going. You're quite right about that.
If you took New York and California, the two most liberal states in the country, if you take them out of the equation, Donald Trump won the popular vote by 3 million. So, he is not... overly popular in the coastal areas, but the problem is the elitism of those in the coastal areas of this country that voted strongly for Hillary in the same sort of mentality that Senator Biagi has for the rest of us unsophisticates that don't happen to be from her neighborhood.
So do you think, are you saying that you live in an elitist state?
I think that there are many, particularly those to the left, that have a very elitist view of the world, based on the performance of elections. I mean, you've seen this for many, many years.
We are, unfortunately, because I love interviewing Nick Langworthy, the chairman of the Republican Party. And Chairman Langworthy, again, thanks for being a good sport, for being on, answering all the questions. And we so much appreciate it. Thanks again.
Thank you, Al.